The only thing you're focused on is sales and you're dialing for dollars. In today's world, it just doesn't work.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, longtime executive coach and professional recruiter and best-selling author. Let's get into it. Greetings. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm Carol Schultz. Today, let's get some guidance on how to rank in AI results and the four A's of change. Over the past 2 years, SEO strategy has drastically changed with the arrival of AI. To get some insight, I have digital marketing strategist Maylee Aztele joining us. Maylee, welcome. First, can you tell the audience a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, so I got a pretty lengthy background, so to speak, but I'm the CEO of Smart Finds Marketing. Our marketing agency is 38 years old. It's been a long ride over 38 years. I started the internet group in 94, and so that's been its own story, as you can imagine. Sure. And then we are an award-winning marketing agency based out of the Detroit metro area. Mm-hmm. And that's the short version of who we are.
Got it. So, you know, the marketing world has shifted considerably with AI powering search results. And I want to talk a little bit about that, but I first think it's appropriate to talk about the four A's of change that you came up with, right? As a sort of a preamble to that because of how things have changed. So let's talk about that first.
And so, you know, having been in this industry for so long, I mean, we took our agency from the traditional media back in the late 80s. And then by 2004, we went 100% digital. So we've been doing digital marketing now for 21 years. Mm-hmm. And during that time frame, what never fails is the fact that businesses have to contend with change. That change is technology changes, right? That's, you know, it's from the basics of Google algorithm, for example, right? To technologies that change in terms of social media coming to market, technologies changing relative to mobile, as you know, for many years, Google's been pushing more and more into the mobile space in terms of how we develop our websites, how we do our apps, how we interact, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and let's face it, now we have AI on the market, right? So that's a pretty significant change in terms of what businesses need to concentrate on, what they need to focus in on when it comes to these types of changes. But it never fails. In my personal opinion and my personal experience, businesses tend to fret, fuss, and fume when there's a change. And
I can empathize.
And I'm like, okay, I'm glad you want to sit there and, you know, be you know,
bitch moan
deal
and
with
complain.
This and bitch moan and complain in your little hole here. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change the fact that your competitors are moving forward and the fact that you can't, if you just sit there and do nothing, you're going to fall behind. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways I was trying to consult with our clients, with businesses, is trying to frame this change in a way that might be better suited to their understanding. And so the four A's of change are basically this: anticipate change, which I think is pretty easy for everybody, and just change is going to happen. But when I say anticipate, I'm also saying, hey, listen, understand whether that, you know, what you're anticipating is going to happen in a month or 6 months. Okay. So, you know, you need to be a little bit more on top of what's going on so that you're not hit, you know, blindsided. The second one is accepting change. And I think this is the hardest one. And this is where the fret and fuss and fuming comes into play. So I keep on having to kind of coach people through that process. And just as I was just mentioning, you know, like we had a client years ago who came to me and said, Maylee, we're not going to play the Google game because Google had an algorithm change. And I'm just throwing out a number right now. Let's say 30% of their investment went down the tubes and they just said, we're done. And I'm like, okay, I understand you're done, but your competitors are not done. And they are still on the Google train. And you're saying that I want to get off the Google train. And so the way that I put this in, for them is, listen, somewhere down the road, you're going to decide to get back on the Google train. but you're going to be so far behind that the investment to catch up to your competitors is going to be beyond what you're capable of spending. It's going to go above your budget. So, because if when you say you want to catch up to your competitors, you're saying, I want to catch up to my competitors fast. You're not trying to catch up to your competitors over, 18 months. You want to catch up to them in 6 months.
Right.
And so the budget required to get you up there in that 6 month period is just too great. So the reality is you're better off staying on the train and moving forward. There is no version of going backwards and there is no version of stopping. That's reality. And the fret, fussing, and fuming is an emotional response. It's not a logical one. Mm-hmm. Logic says you got to stay on the train and move forward. And so if I can get a client past that stage, then the next A is adapting to the changes. Mm-hmm. It's like, what do you need to do to change your processes or your information or your content or whatever. And the last one is probably the easiest, which is adopting the changes, meaning that, okay, I need to implement them and make them operational, right? But those are the four A's of change. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I created this framework to help businesses better understand and put into perspective, how do I deal with the change when it happens? Mm-hmm. And the reality is we're all in a competitive space, no matter what business, what industry you're in, it's competitive.
Right.
And, if I go back, 30 years ago, closer to when we started and when when I had the internet group started, the world was different, right? World was different in 2010 too. And here we are 15 years later in 2025 and it's noisier. There's more going on. It's not just about you being competitive. It's also about you having to get above the noise.
That's right.
And these are not easy items to wrap yourself around. And, I've got two clients right now that they're having a difficult time putting the necessary budget in place to not just get above the noise, but to also get past their competitors. And there's, like I said, there's a reality here. And, we try to do our best trying to balance out the budget needs versus the results needs and the ROI. And so sometimes, we tend to get creative ourselves. Okay. So creative meaning that, okay, well, how do I generate a quick, one-off ROIs very quickly while there's the underlying work that's still going on? Mm-hmm. Right. And so, this whole idea of these four A's and the changes, the technologies, it has a direct relation to budget. That's reality.
Yeah.
And either it's because budget that you lose or, that you invested in and it's gone because something happened and it's no longer relevant, or it's a budget that you have to add or move around in order to continue to move forward, really, at the end of the day.
So
this is where the four A's come into play.
Got it. So walk us through how, AI powering search is changing things for SEO.
So, this is an interesting one to look at. So if we take a look at where we are with AI, and we're just short of 3 years since what we know as ChatGPT came to the public market, to the open market, so to speak. That doesn't mean that AI wasn't in preparations years prior, but
of course,
we're 3 years since it's been in the marketplace. And a lot has changed. There's a lot of good things that are going on, especially for business. I think the AI world has helped to make things more efficient. Certain areas have become more effective. And we're able to process more information faster. And so these are all great things about artificial intelligence and using, your ChatGPT, your Claude, your Gemini, your Copilot, and Perplexity, et cetera, right? These are all great tools out there.
Right.
But the question is, how does this benefit us in the business world outside of the items I just mentioned in terms of efficiency and effectiveness and ROI? The way to look at this is, and this is a simple exercise for everyone to do. go to ChatGPT or whichever platform you're using,
right,
and ask it to identify your competitors,
mm-hmm,
and see what comes up.
We did that, by the way.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. It's a great mm-hmm. exercise. And mm-hmm. then you go through the process and say, well, why am I not on that list? Or if, you know, mm-hmm. you maybe you ask the question about, hey, you know, a company is looking for, like in our case, a marketing agency, who would you recommend? Well, the list comes up. And so, of course, the large national, in some case, international, large corporations we don't compete with.
That's right. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. And then the next thing I did was, okay, well, why didn't you recommend us in this list? Mm-hmm. Right. So that was the second question. And now what the AI does is come back to you and say, these are why I didn't recommend you. All right, fine. Well, I'll take it to the third question. Under what circumstances would you recommend me?
Mm-hmm.
And see what it decides it knows about you. And then based on that, figure out what's missing in the marketplace about you, whether it's your website, your LinkedIn company profile, or something else on the, you know, in the marketplace, like press releases,
right?
That you need to fill. Because what I'm getting at in this conversation is that people are moving away from Google, the regular Google search.
That's
believe
great.
Me, they're not moving away from Gemini and Google's version of AI. That's another story. Mm-hmm. My point is they're moving away from regular Google, from the regular Google mm-hmm. search, and they're going directly to the AI platforms, the GPTs out there, and asking questions and getting, to be perfectly honest with you, better and more relevant responses. That's reality. I did several tests myself in, you know, the last few years, especially in recent time as well, in terms of going to Google and doing a search and then going to ChatGPT and asking it for this, you know, for the same search and looking at what I'm getting. Now, in the Google case, I have to go through whatever, and just throwing out an example here, 5 different websites, right? I go to each website, I get her, and I have to look, is this really what I want? Mm-hmm. And that's where we run into a problem in terms of time. I did the same thing in ChatGPT, and I get exactly what I want. I don't have to go searching through 3, 5, 10 different websites to see if I'm getting what I'm looking for. It gives it right there and then. And in most cases, it gives you the most current information and gives you the sources that it's finding. So if you have a question about the sources, you can go look at them. This is where I'm talking about AI being more efficient. It's faster.
Yeah.
You know, versus the traditional
Google route. Then the research you can do on your own, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you can expand the research and you can actually, you know, find more opportunities in this case. So mm-hmm. when we look at this situation, I'm going to get to the third point that I'm going to make about mm-hmm. AI. Not to drag this out because I could keep talking forever. But the third part is, what do you as a company need to do for the GPTs of the world to recognize that you're out there,
yeah.
who you are, and under what circumstances are they going to recommend you right. when somebody's in there asking a question?
How do they know that you're any good?
Right, exactly. And
just
so
because, just because you seed it doesn't mean you're any good.
Right. Well, right. So you need to prove yourself. And one of the things that the GPTs are looking for, which is, and interestingly enough, it's not any different than what Wikipedia is looking for.
Right.
You need to have notable sources on the web. In other words, first of all, like I mentioned earlier, having press releases, not just one press release in the market, mm-hmm. having press releases out there helps to develop your brand. It helps to develop mm-hmm. these notable sources, because if you do a press release distribution and you actually pay for it at the level that you need to, it's going to end up on the notable websites, ABC, CBS's, NBC's, mm-hmm. Fox's, CNN's, the financial networks, etc. You're going to get the notable resources that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. That's a good starting point. Your website is a whole nother ballgame. Now, for your website, what I'm going to now say is goes in two parts. Part one goes back to 2007 when Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft got together and came up with a platform called Schema. If you go to schema.org, it'll get, you probably get more technical information than you want. But the concept is, how do I identify the data that's on a web page? Is this an article? Is it a press release? Is this a phone number? Is this a zip code? What is the data that's on that page? You need to tell it within the HTML code. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, and there are lots of tools out there to help make, you know, to do this faster. Believe me, you don't have to code every bit of it. But the other side of the equation is, what does AI want?
Yes.
And right. AI wants something called JSON, J-S-O-N, but is also expanding the type of data that it wants that's in that schema. So the fastest way for any company to do this is to go to ChatGPT, type in, give me the JSON code for my homepage. Give me the JSON code for this blog post, and let it provide you the script. Just do a copy paste and dump it in. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are two quick items I'm going to bring up. One, awesome. Notable sources, right? And number two is to get your schema / JSON code into your web pages. That'll help to provide the GPTs the information that they're looking for.
Awesome. That's fantastic. Thank you, Mei Li. So let's go back to the beginning of Smart Finds, internet marketing. What inspired you to start the company?
Well, a few things. First of all, I'm an early adopter. Mm-hmm. I'm also, I don't want to call it a serial entrepreneur, but I enjoy business at the end of the day. And so starting the company was started back in 87. But then I remember a buddy of mine came to me back in 93 and he said, you have to see this. And he was working with Sun Microsystems at the time and invited me to their offices. And he showed me Netscape and he showed me Yahoo. And we both looked at each other and said, okay, time to get into this platform. Mm-hmm. Because prior to that, you had AOL, you had CompuServe, right? You had Prodigy.net. And these were all closed networks that controlled what you saw and what you did. So on the one hand, they were getting paid by subscribers. On the other hand, they were getting paid by content providers. And it was all based on pay to play. And so you were limited to your freedom, so to speak, within the AOL, the Prodigy, and the CompuServe world.
Right.
What the internet did was open it up with no restrictions. And so that's where we saw the opportunity, was the fact that people are going to move from those platforms to the internet because they're sick and tired of being controlled. And that's how we started the internet group in back in 1994. The 90s was great. It was like the wild, wild west of the internet. There were no rules at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
SEO was real easy. Just jam pack it with
keywords. Yeah, and you're good to go.
And you're good to go inside of Yahoo. And Yahoo was still new. It was trying to figure out how to manage this data and these algorithms. You know, so that was kind of the starting point of where we went. But as we went through the 1990s, because we had the ISP team, because that's what you did back then. And we did high-speed connections with large corporations in the Detroit metro area. But then, of course, people started saying, hey, I need a website. Well, now we have to learn HTML. We were learning the bare bones HTML.
Before WordPress was available to do it a whole lot easier.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Before all of that, right?
Yeah,
right. So you're hard coding everything, and it was just crazy. But then by the time you got to the year 2000, AT&T and Comcast started to undercut their resellers. And so we said, well, we need to get out of the ISP group or the ISP business. The concept over here was this. The ISP business was not our core business. We're a marketing agency. The ISP business helped us get into the internet. And so once we started to develop websites, and what we did was website marketing, not web marketing, not digital marketing. Back then, you try to get your website out there through these website submission services. So once we got that underway, we sold off the ISP team back in 2002. And by 2004, we went 100% digital. I mean, it was evident all the budget is going to the internet and less is going to traditional media. And so with that, we kind of pushed forward and we've been at it now for 21 years and just as much as I'm on your podcast, I'm an industry author. You know, I come up with my own concepts as far mm-hmm. as what's going on in technology and business and in marketing, and we try to apply it across the board, no matter what size the business is.
Yep. So let's walk through your offer evolution. And I know what you sell has changed since starting the company.
Sure, absolutely.
But other than the kind of obvious things we've talked about, has anything else affected what you sell and who you sell to? Something that we wouldn't be thinking about.
Let's talk about that, especially how does it impact the workplace and let's say my team, right? So mm-hmm. We did have a horrible experience back in 2009 when we had the financial crisis.
Yes.
And if you give me a minute, I will bring this around to your question.
Yeah.
And so I had to let a good portion of my team go. That's reality. Mm-hmm. Not everybody, but a good portion of it. We needed to get through that. And luckily, by the time we got to Q4 of 2010, our large corporate clients started to come back and we were back in business. But I had to mm-hmm. rebuild a team, essentially.
Yeah.
And so the team that we currently have has been working with me for 14 years.
Well, that's impressive. Yeah.
Yeah, we're 25 strong in terms of creative and marketing, technical, writers. Everybody's in Detroit. And I've had some interesting questions come up about the fact that, you know, we've been all working together and with each other. I'm not a big fan of saying somebody works for me. I understand I own the company, but as far as I'm concerned, we work with each other. And we built a culture around that. We also built a culture based on the fact that I ask people for referrals. I don't just put an ad in on the paper, so to mm-hmm. speak, and yeah. look for people to send me their resume. So I based it on referrals.
Thank you.
And and then we go with the people that are working with me to ask them if we need additional staff, that I would ask them who they refer, the concept being birds of a feather flock together, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we built this on that concept. However, I've been asked, how everybody's been able to work together for this long. And
yes.
the one thing, in my humble opinion, it's not just the environment that we all created together, but I also think that the financial crisis, since everybody's from Detroit, everybody's in Detroit, mm-hmm. the financial crisis hit yes. everybody in the Detroit metro area very hard.
Yes, it did.
This is like, just like soldiers are in the battlefield, they, mm-hmm. They develop this this bond. And I think the same thing happens with a lot of people that experience that financial crisis mm-hmm. for roughly 2 years. That's not chump change time. Mm-hmm. For 2 years, being in quote unquote in a battle scenario where they're shoveling people out of the Detroit metro area, out of Michigan. Mm-hmm. I mean, the roads were empty at one point to be perfect. I mean, I would say empty isn't zero, but half the amount that would normally be there. And so I think that bond exists because of the experience that we all shared. Whether we knew each other back then or not didn't make a difference. And so mm-hmm. I think this is a pond. Then, of course, the fact that we all built a culture around how we work with each other, how we interact and communicate. But to go back to your question, we've also had a change along the way. And so we made a huge change in 24 on the platforms that we're using to manage projects and to communicate the projects. So now we're using Slack, for example, right? We're using Asana. These are not, mm-hmm. Tools that, it took us a while to get to these platforms, but now that we're in them, it's like, great, right? They interact mm-hmm. and you share information across multiple platforms. So these are very helpful tools. So that's one change that took place as well is, how do we manage and communicate? These are just some of the examples. I mean, like I said, you can keep me on here for an hour and I could talk about each section individually.
Right. Maile, what would you say is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now? If there is any.
Yeah. I mean, if I think about 2025, okay, so I'm going to narrow it down to where we are today. And the biggest bottleneck to growth, interestingly enough, and I happen to have a very similar conversation on this earlier today, is the political climate.
Yeah, right.
All right. It's the political climate, not just within the country, it's also the political climate internationally. Mm-hmm. And we have, you know, now that we have a third major section going on, right? So you had the Middle East is one issue. Ukraine is another issue. Now we have Venezuela as a third issue, right? Mm-hmm. These are the types of things that are keeping people up at night and saying, I don't want to make a commitment. I don't want to make a decision. I talked to somebody earlier today who gave me an example of a company that was a U.S.-based company that was ready to add a new facility in one of three major metropolitan areas. It's a manufacturing company.
In this country.
In this country, it's a U.S. company trying to create another location in three other major metropolitan areas.
Got it.
They backed off for a year. You can sit there and make logical decisions as to why they did. I can also argue why they should make logical decisions to move forward. Right?
I would agree with that completely. Yeah.
How far you
can't just
you
stand there like
wait.
A deer in headlights, right?
Well, that, exactly.
How long is that going to happen until you're like, oh shit, right. I should have done something three or six months ago.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. I never understood
and this
that.
This is my argument to these businesses is that how long do you want to wait? You want to wait 6 months? You want to wait a year? Are you going to wait 4 years? What are you planning? Yep. I mean, you can't just hold back your business entirely.
I agree.
A year from now, I don't know that anything's going to change.
You have to keep, it's not going to, and you have to keep investing.
You got to keep investing. You got to keep
pushing
forward.
No matter how much it hurts sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, so if you ask me what's the biggest bottleneck right now is I'll give you a perfect example. We have a prospect. It's an international company trying to get into the U.S. market. Mm-hmm. And I've already started to feel that they're so slowly backing off, right? Because they're unsure about whether or not their investment in the U.S. market is going to generate the response that they're looking for. And I'm having the same argument with them right now. I said, okay, if you don't start now, a year from now, it could cost you more because the climate's going to be different. The competition's going to be ahead of you. There's going to be more things going on in the marketplace. And I don't know that you want to deal with that. My suggestion is find a budget level that you are comfortable with and let's get started. It makes no sense to wait. And so that the bottleneck that we're talking about is that bottleneck that is the political climate that is making companies rethink what they invest and when they invest, albeit it's illogical. I mean, I can tell you for our own company in the next 90 days, especially during the B2B selling season that I call it, we're doing additional investments into our brand, into our marketing. To get our name out into the marketplace, because I also know that there are other companies that are marketing agencies that are probably pulling back just like their clients. And I'm saying, do the exact opposite, invest and move forward and beat your competition. This is the time to do that.
When we first talked, we talked a little bit about your average deal size and you said it was somewhere in the 250K and north. So, that puts large companies into your wheelhouse, right?
We say large companies, I mean, they have to be at least $10 million or more. Granted, they're going to be probably $20, $30 million, okay? But I don't know. I mean, $20, $30 million companies is still
not a huge company. No, I completely agree. They're not even considered a mid-sized company. They're still considered small.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't you have to make a compelling argument for a, let's say, $10 million company to cough up $250,000 for this kind of thing? That's a lot of money, even to a $10 million company.
Sure. So,
I mean, I've had companies. Yeah. I don't charge near that to my clients, and I've had companies in the $5 million range. Go. I don't know if we can afford this, and I'm thinking you can't not afford this.
Correct. And so this is a good question. It's going to be a fun fun answer.
Not that they can't afford it, but they don't want to spend the money on that. Let's put it that way. Sure.
Right. But so I think there's a few things to keep in mind. And I have a good example with a current client mm-hmm. who had created this business back in 2010. And they ran it for whatever, 10 years, you know, 5 years or so. And were they grew it and they sold it. And then X number, and here we are. 10 years afterwards, mm-hmm. they're trying to create a very similar business and they're hitting, and they just got into the market about 3 years ago. Unfortunately, the owners believe that whatever they did back in 2010 to 2015 is the same thing that they can do now, which in their case was just go direct to sales. In other words, no marketing foundation, no business development, just take sales guys dialing for dollars and closing deals. And whatever the case is, if that worked back in 2010
or 2015,
it's not working now, right?
That's right.
Okay, so let's use that as our foundation to answer the question. Yeah. All right, so why isn't it working? Post-pandemic, there's more noise on the web. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying competitive noise, it's just noisy.
Noise, I know.
Everybody, everybody went in-house and everybody started to post and everybody started to share. And there's just everything going on. And, and what I mean by that is everybody's attention is spread too thin in too many different places. So you, as the company, you have to figure out, how do I reach my target audience? How do I get their attention? Mm-hmm. That's the issue. And I look, don't shoot the messenger. $5,000 a month doesn't cut it anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's reality. And what do I mean by that? What I'm saying is you have to have omni-channel marketing to reach your target audience. You need omni-channel marketing to get above the noise.
Yeah.
And it's not just one press release every 3 months. I'm saying two press releases per month. It's not just one blog post or four blog posts a month. I'm saying you need 10 blog posts a month.
Oy vey.
It's not just posting on LinkedIn and, you know, hoping that somebody's going to engage with you. You have to actively have somebody doing the work inside of LinkedIn, get people's attention. And that's why I'm saying that $5,000 a month in a budget or $60,000 a year doesn't cut it. You need that that $10,000 to $15,000 minimum range. So you're dealing with upper month. Now you're dealing with 120, right, to 180 range. Mm-hmm. But now if you want to add advertising, you need to add that to that. That baseline budget is just to do the omni-channel marketing. It doesn't include advertising. Mm-hmm. And now I'm not suggesting you have to do advertising 24/7 every day. Generally, what we recommend for clients is to do advertising in 90-day spurts with proper planning ahead of time. And making sure that during that campaign that you're actually able to optimize your campaign on an ongoing basis. Mm-hmm. That's how we use advertising. Now, look, if you're selling widgets, most of our clients are B2B, or I should say all of our clients are B2B. But if you're in the B2C world, you might find that advertising is necessary ongoing. That's a different ballgame as far as I'm concerned. But in the B2B world, an omni-channel budget with advertising, you're going to run right around $250,000 in a budget year. That's just rough as, you know, I'm ballparking here for most companies. And I'm suggesting that there is a reason why the rates have gone up. The budgets need to be higher. It's just, you, like I said, you got to get above the noise.
Yeah.
You have to get above your competition. And more importantly, you need to do omni-channel marketing to hit various parts of the internet so that you can get somebody's attention.
Right. So, you know, you mentioned just a bit ago about the bottleneck of the political climate right now. How has that been affecting your ability to close business for yourself?
I mean, you know,
if at all.
Yeah. It hasn't affected us too much, although I can feel it.
Yeah.
In other words, you know, and just to use this as an example, let's say we have 10 prospects, right? Mm-hmm. And they all look really good and we should be able to close 6, 7, 8 of them.
That's very
well, we're only looking at 2 or 3. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's where the change is. That's because businesses are deciding to back off. And I think that's the issue that we're running into. So it's not that we're not closing deals or not, you know, having, mm-hmm. you know, working with new clients. we have older clients too. I mean, we have clients that have been with us for over 10 years.
Yeah.
And the good news is a lot of those clients continue to be work with us, which is great. But in terms of new acquisitions, while we're getting the acquisitions, we should be getting twice as many acquisitions. Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm seeing the change.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, exactly. So,
and I'm not, and obviously we're not the only, you know, we're not the only company in the same boat, right? I mean, most everybody's dealing with this or having to face this type of impact, at least during 2025. Now, you know, whether or not people snap out of it by the time we get into 2026, I don't know. We'll see.
We can hope.
We can hope. Although, exactly.
Hope is not an effective strategy, but we can still hope. I was going to ask you something.
Well, hang on a second. You know what? Let's talk about this. This is interesting.
Yeah.
So I just mentioned to you that, you know, we're investing into our company, into our mm-hmm. branding to push things forward, to get mm-hmm. past our competition, to raise awareness about mm-hmm. this. I will tell you that the result of this investment is not just for the brand. It's not just for the company. Mm-hmm. And as we talk about, you know, the workforce, the workplace, yeah. this is a morale booster, right? So it's for the staff too. I mean, if they know that the company is moving forward, the company is investing,
that's right.
There's a morale side of this equation mm-hmm. as well. And so if you as a company are holding back, I don't want to invest. I'm a little afraid. I don't like the political climate. I don't like the marketplace,
that's
blah,
right.
blah, 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 blah. If you find excuses to not do anything and just sit around, or like you were using earlier, you know, sitting around with it, you know, with the deer, like a deer with the headlights.
Deer in headlights, yeah, right.
I mean, then that doesn't help the morale no. within your company.
No, it does not.
As a matter of fact, it does the exact opposite.
That's right.
And so...
You know, I've talked about that at length, obviously, ad nauseum, in fact. And, you know, I remember back in the day, and you'll know this because you've been in business a long time, as have I. So there were four major database companies, like back in the 90s, may have gone back to the 80s, in fact, right? Oracle, Sybase, Informix, and yeah. Ingress, mm-hmm. which had prior been called yeah. RTI Relational Technologies.
Yeah.
And most people listening to this, unless they're, you know, probably over 50, will be thinking, who the hell's Ingress? I think I've heard of Sybase.
Right.
I'm not really sure. But here's a really interesting story. I often talked to, because of the nature of the business I was in back then early in my career, where I was primarily headhunting salespeople, right? And I would talk to people who'd worked for Ingress. I mean, really for all the database companies. And people would, by and large, I mean, well north of 50% would say, hands down, Ingress built the best database. Hands yeah. down. But they spent zero money on marketing. Like zero.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah. the moral of their story is they no longer exist. I believe CA bought them at some point. And,
right,
and they
exactly.
probably got them, I mean, for like a fire sale.
Because
Ingress wasn't worth anything back then sure. at that point. You know, as opposed to Oracle and the marketing machine that they built. Now, do I think absolutely. Oracle has even close to the best products? No way.
Yeah.
But they're a marketing machine, and look where they are as a consequence. Those are
exactly.
just, that's just one. I could give you 100 examples,
know,
1,000 examples
like
of those, see, throughout my 30 right, plus and, year career. But that's just, right, that's so, one that most people listening to this, especially if they're over 50, will think, oh yeah, right, I totally get that, right? And hopefully 100%. The under 50 crowd will understand that.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we've seen it yeah. so many times. We take yeah. Kodak, right? Take IBM.
Yep.
I mean, even though they are surviving today.
Right.
These guys should be the monsters at this point, and they're not.
They should be.
These, you know, that's one scenario. But going to the example you were just mentioning, this mm-hmm. kind of aligns with these two clients that we have as well, who are singularly focused just on sales mm-hmm. and don't understand that in order for sales to be effective and to mm-hmm. close deals faster,
you need marketing.
You need a marketing.
There's
you
no
need
question.
A branding campaign. Mm-hmm. Without that, that doesn't work. Marketing supports business development and also supports sales.
That's right.
You need business development for somebody to go out there and network, mm-hmm. get your name out there to the marketplace and to find the right people to talk to and build relationships, build partnerships, et cetera, so that you can get some referral sources as well.
Yeah.
So what I'm getting at is marketing and business development ultimately both support sales. And as you get, and let's just use this as a simple example, if you got 10 leads in, can the sales guy close them in 30 days or do they need 90?
That's right.
That would be called your sales cycle.
Right. For those listening who don't know that.
But what my point is that, okay, my example, you know, I'm sure somebody's going to, you know, throw a bunch of holes into it, but it's a concept. My point is that how quickly is your sales cycle?
Yes.
If your marketing and your business development are right behind sales, your sales cycle is going to be less and less. That's reality.
That's right.
If the only thing you're focused on is sales and you're doing you're dialing for dollars in today's world, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. That's, well, and it does depend on, you know, so here are the holes that would get thrown into that, right? Depends on the size of your deal, right? If you're selling multi-million dollar deals to Coca-Cola, that deal ain't closing in 30 days. It could take 3 to 5 years, in fact, depending on the size of the deal, right? But not everybody's an elephant hunter. I think most people are not elephant hunters. So consequently, I think for, especially in the SMB space, that, you know, that may be more logical, right? And certainly to your point, you know, marketing and biz dev all supports your sales cycle. So, you know, that said, as you said, and as I know, we could continue talking about this for considerably longer than the 40 minutes we've been talking. So with that, I'm going to thank you,
Maylee
Aztalay, CEO of SmartFinds Internet Marketing, for joining me today. This is really, I always really enjoy talking to you. It's such an interesting, it's you know, I think anybody listening to this will look at your advice and go, oh yeah, we totally need to put this into play. So I'm grateful and I mean, thank you.
This is where knowledge and experience comes into play. Honestly, it's, you know, what you gain over years. I mean, that's, let's right. face it, I wasn't like this 30 years ago.
nor was I. Right.
Exactly.
people I think are coming back around to realizing, you know, do I want to hire somebody with 15 minutes of experience?
Right.
Or do I want to hire somebody that has 30 years experience or 40 years experience? Yes, they're probably going to be more expensive.
But more effective.
All right. Ta-ta for now.
All right, Carol.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening and see you next time.